Greetings, everyone. And we're live here at the Himmelian Institute at our headquarters. It's great to be with you here once again for a special live stream event. This afternoon is with Ishan Tigunayat, the power of spiritual community. And before we turn it over to Ishan, I wanted to give to you a little bit of an update on what's been going on here at the Institute. First of all, it's been really wonderful for us, our community, our faculty, to stay in touch with you the past 3 months. With digital online offerings, and we've offered dozens of Facebook Lives that tens of thousands of you have viewed and taken interest in. We've offered several live streams with Puniji, and we've had close to 10 educational webinars in the span of the last 3 months as well. Well over 500 of you have joined us for these special webinar events. So our whole team here and our faculty has really enjoyed staying in touch with you in that way the last 3 months. In fact, just yesterday we finished our special online offering of our 500-hour teacher training. We offered a segment through the month of June, and the next one begins shortly here in July. We also are looking forward to a special in-person program with Puniji on July 10th. We opened our doors just this weekend again to hosting live in-person events, and it feels great. It went well across the board with our residential community and staff, as well as those who attended. So on July 10th, Puniji will offer Mahapushti Yaga from July 10th through July 19th. It's a special program that will involve a concluding practice, celebratory practice, for our year-long meditation on July 16th. Program will be here in person, of course, July 10th through the 19th, and offered as an online live stream webinar as well. Space remains for both. And if you're contemplating joining us here in person, you might consider clicking on you'll see on the top of our website at himalayaninstitute.org, kind of a link to the incredible detailed and thorough protocols we've put in place with your safety, your wellness, frontmost in our minds. And so we're really thrilled to be offering in-person programs once again, and really look forward to hosting you on July 10th. Stay tuned for more information. While on the one hand, year-long meditation comes to a conclusion quite soon, there's usually also a beginning when things come to an end, and we're really excited to unveil some new programs, especially around Vishoka meditation. Okay, back to Ishan. So Ishan, as many of you might know, he's been a lifelong yogi and meditation practitioner, really born, raised, schooled here, right here in Honesdale and at the Institute. He's been our executive director at the Institute since 2014. He's executive chairman of Yoga International, a role he's played since 2015. And he's also co-founder of Mocha Origins. He added one new thing to his resume recently, and just this past January, he received Entrepreneur of the Year, an award given by the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. And of course, Ishan is a faculty member, and he's a key component of our teacher training, yogi living, and Vishoka meditation curriculum. And I think it's just really neat, really cool, that a faculty member of ours, a lifelong student of yoga and meditation, is Entrepreneur of the Year as well. And I think it speaks volumes to the teachings that Swami Rama, the founder of the Institute, and Puniji tell us, that spiritual practice, spiritual aspirations aren't in opposition to worldly pursuits as well. And we think Ishan embodies both quite well. And so we're really pleased to have him here this afternoon to talk to us about the power of spiritual community. So I'll turn it over to Ishan, and I'm going to exit that way.
Thank you, Greg, for that wonderful introduction, and good afternoon to all of you around the world who are joining us for this wonderful live stream on a Sunday afternoon. We're in the middle of a little bit of a thunderstorm here, so it's in the Vedic system, in the Indian system, it's considered a very auspicious sign when lightning, thunder, rain, nourishment comes. It also might bring a power outage, an internet outage, so we'll see what happens. But we'll take it as an auspicious beginning to our dialogue and discussion and practice about the power of spiritual community. This topic is very meaningful to me personally, I'm sure to many of you, and extraordinarily timely. I was just reflecting back on it several months ago, quite a while ago. We were working on the calendar of live stream events for the Wisdom Library, and the inspiration for this live stream was really in context primarily to the conclusion of the year-long meditation, which is coming up on July 16th. But of course, in the last 90 days, 100 days or so, the awareness of community has exponentially increased in our mind and perhaps has taken on a new meaning. And it's very important to begin with that and to see how important it is for us to reflect deeply on the role of community, and then taking even a step back and seeing what the nature of spiritual community is all about and how it relates to our personal idea of community. The extraordinary turbulence, social turbulence, that our country and really the world is going through and has been going through for over a month now, goes to the very heart of this. When we see and when we feel find ourselves engulfed in social instability, unrest, when very vividly we become aware of inequality, injustice, it's extraordinarily painful. It's painful because at our core, we understand how important it is for every single human being to have the opportunity to express their humanity, to be loved and to love. When that's challenged, it shakes us to our core. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. That pain is manifesting in the anger, frustration, fear that we're experiencing. All of these things are symptoms of something deeper. As a spiritual organization, the Institute embodies a unique energy where we try to find the root cause and we try to understand how a spiritual solution is able to address that root cause. And in that context, our dialogue today is extraordinarily important and relevant. How we can find a deeper capacity to work with the challenges we see today, to be a force for positive change, but coming from a place of peace, inner stability, and taking a long-term view that we want to pass on a beautiful, vibrant, peaceful society to our coming generations. We want to make sure that the fire that we're experiencing today, that's prevalent throughout our society, can achieve its purpose in a structured way and bring forward transformation rather than chaos and destruction. The goal is transformation. And when people work together to bring positive change, bring transformation that's rooted in peace, that's the role of spiritual community. COVID-19 is also an extraordinarily powerful factor when reflecting on the role of spiritual community. For most of us, somewhere in early March, or certainly by mid-March, our lives were fundamentally transformed in a way that certainly in my lifetime, in my generation, we've never seen. Where almost overnight, human contact evaporated. And we were forced to really understand what does it mean to have human experiences in an era where isolation, social distancing are the norm. Community intrinsically is about relationships with other people, and in large part, relationships in close physical proximity. We were forced to reflect on what is the modern notion of community when we are not able to be physically present to each other. And of course, the power of technology has allowed us to find many of those connections, very much like what we're doing this afternoon. Through the power of technology, we share, we connect. And yet we find that it's in the key in allowing technology to allow us to be truly connected is for there to be a deeper substance, a deeper capacity that the technology allows us to share. It's not the technology itself which is bringing us a sense of community, but rather a more deeper human emotion, human identity. And most of us have also reached the conclusion that the use of technology augments our need for human connection, but it can't replace it. We're biding our time, being patient, being responsible, and yet we all know that at some point, human contact is necessary, not just for our own health and well-being, but for us to be able to be custodians of humanity. COVID-19 and the social unrest underpinned by racial inequality and systemic racism that might be prevalent in many aspects of life, all of these factors have shaken us to the core. They forced us to take a look not only at ourselves in a new light, but at the very idea of community. And in this light, let's talk a little bit about the difference, or at least the way I see the difference between the word community and spiritual community. For the most part, community, in a literal sense, conveys some type of group identity or relationships that are largely underpinned by a common set of values, certain identities, whether they're racial identities, cultural identities, religious identities, socioeconomic identities. For the most part, a community, the way that the word community is used, is a grouping of individuals based on a common identity. And those identities are almost always quite external. They're identities which the world has created and which we as human beings have nurtured and allowed to stay in place. And it's not that these identities are good or bad. They are what we are in many cases. Let's say cultural identity, ethnic identity. They're an important part of who we are. But spiritual community is looking at something deeper, because if these external identities are the only basis for what holds us together, our world can remain quite small. Those kind of identities have their place and are very useful, but we have to realize that they're supported by something much more essential. That's what allows us to expand our identity. And in the words of Swami Rama, the founder of the Himalayan Institute, it's what allows us to discover the essence of our humanity. He often made a very intriguing statement, which I frequently quote in lectures, that we are already divine. We simply need to discover how to be fully human. Understanding the extent of our humanity and really what is at its core, the heart of our humanity, is the very reason why we're here. Once we discover that, everything else is available to us. All of these external identities are part of that broader identity of being a human being, but they're not the totality. That's the key thing. Be proud of where we come from. Understand what our likes and dislikes are and how those likes and dislikes influence our relationships to other people. That's the honest truth, that there are certain things we like and dislike. And yet, we must strive to see how that's not the totality of our identity. And most importantly, strive to ensure that those limited identities don't keep us at arm's length or even more from other people. We have to begin to take down the barriers. That's what the idea of spiritual community is all about. Spiritual community rests on a simple yet powerful idea, that there's an underlying essence of humanity that every single one of us embodies. That essence is our source. It's what allows us to be human. Finding that essence is the goal of spiritual community and putting it into practice. When we put it into practice, we are truly able to form a spiritual community that is inclusive. In fact, we might say that it's the quintessential definition of inclusiveness. Normally, inclusiveness, in a practical sense, is making sure that all of these external identities are given room to coexist peacefully. And that's how it begins, that we allow ourselves to be comfortable living in a diverse world. Spiritual community takes it several steps further by trying to find the underlying unity or essence in all this diversity. The power of spiritual community is what allows us to fulfill the promise of humanity by discovering where we come from and who we are. One of the intriguing things about this notion is that it asks us to find a deeper identity within ourselves. To make it real, if I've just said that conventional sense of community is based on external identities, spiritual community is based on this deeper identity that comes from within. That's not a label that the world places on us. We have to find it and experience it. It can't just be an intellectual idea. Normally, all the identities that we find in the world are superimposed. And we're trying to find balance in diversity. You can imagine how difficult that is, because the world intrinsically is formed into small groups. If we spend the entirety of our time trying to reconcile every single difference, trying to find the specific place where every single aspect of diversity should fit in or could fit in the way that we think it should, it'll take a long time. We want a shortcut. We all want to find peace quickly. How do we find a way that people can create the space in their mind and heart for each other? By finding that in ourselves first. By finding an experience of essence and unity in ourselves. And when that happens, an amazing thing occurs. We no longer are looking to reconcile external differences. We don't need mediation. It's a radical idea, because obviously when there's an immediate problem outside, something needs to be done about it. I'm not saying that we should be complacent or close our eyes, put our head in the sand, and ignore everything. There are moments when action is necessary. But if the only tool that we have in our toolbox to try to bring peace in the world is to address every single problem, all we're going to find is problems, because there's a myriad of different opinions. Everyone will see it from a slightly different perspective. To say that it could take a long time might be an understatement. So the yogis of the past recognized that while we work in the external world in accordance to our dharma, our sense of purpose, which is distinct to each of us, make sure that we anchor ourselves in something inside, where rather than trying to put every single diversity into context, we find the force of unity within. That's the goal here. How can we find that? Another very important idea to reflect on is that external community is something that we create. Human beings come together around these different identities and create community. Spiritual community is something that we receive, we inherit. It's truly a resource from Mother Nature. If we believe that we have to create spiritual community, it's just another form of an external identity. We have to find the humility and patience and subtlety to see that there is a deeper essence of humanity that is the foundation for every single external identity we have, and that we didn't create it, we received it. Every single human being is born with that. It was a gift, the same gift for each of us. And that gift is like a seed, and it manifests and it grows into a unique identity, which is why there's so much diversity. When we begin to see that spiritual community is not something that we have to fight for, something that we have to create or fix or keep alive, we are awakened to a much bigger world. We begin to see how our pursuit of spiritual community is, it transcends every single external identity. We're trying to rediscover whatever we were born with, whatever we had before we gave ourselves new identities or the world gave them to us, whichever way you want to look at it. That's where this idea of essence comes from, which is a very yogic idea. What is our source? What is it that makes us uniquely us? Here we're talking about what is it that makes a human being uniquely human. That essence of humanity is the force of spiritual community, the power of spiritual community. The way that we find this power of spiritual community is by discovering a deeper identity. We'll talk about a few different ways that we do this. The most important one is through inner connection. This identity that we're looking for, which is the power of spiritual community or the essence of humanity, comes from the inside. Extremely simple but profound idea. We need to find the courage to put aside our other identities, even just for a moment, and look within and see what we find. This fundamental principle is the basis for the entirety of the path of yoga and meditation. That as we look within, we are introduced to an extraordinarily subtle and powerful aspect of our identity. Inner connection is what allows us to find it. What is this inner connection? Inner connection is what is the is our search to find the mind's deeper capacity, to see what allows us to perceive, what allows us to discern, what allows us to be. The path of yoga is beautiful because it introduces us to this idea of inner connection in a very systematic way. First, beginning with our body and breath. Beginning from whatever feels real to us. And starting from that point of reality, seeing how that dimension of ourself rests upon something more subtle and yet more powerful. And we discover an inner reality, an inner connection, based on whatever is real to us today. That's how we can be sure that we're resting on firm ground. When we begin to feel that capacity of ourself, something inside, we realize that everything that we know about the world, everything that we know about ourselves, the source of its reality is actually coming from within. Our capacity to perceive, our capacity to nurture all of these external identities comes from the inside. We really begin to profoundly feel this when we're held by the power of breath. So much of yoga is introducing us to this power of breath. We begin to see how there's a deeper energetic potential which brings breath to life. That energetic potential is called prana. It's a self-aware, purposeful movement which animates us. Ultimately, this journey of inner connection is about being connected to our pranic awareness, to the feeling that this prana embodies within us. First in our body, in conscious movement and conscious stillness, and then by seeing how there is a more subtle dimension of breath which pulsates in a unique way as we invite the mind to turn inward and see how we can rest in that breath awareness and then that pranic awareness, that energetic pulsation that we feel within through the power of breath. We're connected to our source of power, our mind's source of power, our body's source of power, which in yoga we call prana. That connection is like our primordial umbilical cord. It's always been there, and yet we take it for granted. Life is so mesmerizing that we rarely stop to reflect on what was the source of life in the first place, and what is that thread which allows us to see where the connection of where we are today to wherever our life began. All of us have had this experience that time just flies by like that. And, you know, when all of us were younger, we always heard our parents, grandparents, whoever, say that when you're my age, it'll feel like time goes by even faster. And as we get a little older, we realize that that's actually the case. It's because we begin to gain some sensitivity to the source of life itself. That sensitivity should be directed to a good use. Rather than being worried about how much more we have left, we realize how precious whatever we've received is. And it can lead us to reflect on this connection and realize that it's not the world which gives us life, but rather it's something much deeper within us which gives life to the world. First, it gave life to the world, and that same life gave us our start. Reconnecting consciously, purposefully, lovingly is what awakens us to a whole new world. That's what the path of yoga and meditation is trying to do. When we find this pranic connection, our mind is deeply nourished. Our emotional identity is deeply nourished. And this deeper essence of humanity, which is our core, is nourished. And because it's nourished, it's allowed to come forward. In those moments of stillness, we find clarity. We find inner strength. We find contentment. All of those things manifest in a really simple type of phenomena where we don't remember all of our personal likes and dislikes. It's almost like they're put on pause. We're simply present. And our identity rests in that present moment awareness. It rests purely in a feeling of being. That's exactly what prana is all about. That feeling of present moment awareness, being, which manifests as clarity, nourishment, strength, is exactly what inner connection is all about. When we have that, we don't need to tell ourselves that we have a deeper identity. We are that identity. And the trick there, at that moment then, as we're in the depth of our practice of yoga and meditation, is to remember the feeling of that deeper identity and recognize that it is the essence of our identity, the essence of our humanity, the best of ourselves, and allow that to motivate us to come back out to the world. Allow it to be the power of our external identities. When we do so, our external identities don't have the same power to limit us, to keep other people away, and to create a sense of duality in the world. We're able to see how our external identities are conduits to express our individual uniqueness. They're not a mechanism to protect us from the world, to keep people away. The goal of yoga certainly isn't to make every single person the same, but rather to understand our intrinsic, essential unity and allow that awareness to enrich and enliven our unique diversities. Then we'll be who we are. We'll share it in a beautiful way. And we won't have to work hard to create an inclusive environment, but rather, it'll spontaneously come out of us because we're so clear about our deeper essence, our deeper identity. Every single aspect of nature is unique and finds a way to appreciate that diversity. There's a purpose behind every single creature. And it's so intricate, so diverse, so vast, it just blows our mind when you begin studying it. How did all of this happen? How is it all held in balance? And not just in balance, but in an extraordinary precision, purpose. Everything is perfectly in place. How can we possibly find that degree of perfection as human beings? When we begin to see that that perfection is our source, and that the harder we work to make everything perfect outside, the less likely it is that it will be. When we find our inner connection, we can spontaneously express our essence in a unique way, which is exactly what nature does. We can live in harmony with each other, add beauty to each other, and be a force of joy while we retain our individuality. That's the power of inner connection. It's a vast idea. It's the heart of yoga. We could talk about this many, many sessions. We do this through our practice of the eight limbs. All of these limbs, starting from the yamas and niyamas that create a healthy, vibrant worldview, which allow us to relate to the world and relate to ourself in a balanced, healthy way, begins from there. We soften our identities through the yamas and niyamas. We understand how we can express ourselves and be understood. We become a citizen of the world in a balanced way. And from that balanced point, we begin a very systematic inward journey to use the power of intrinsic in our body. My father often refers to it as the innate wisdom of the body, and awaken that through the power of breath. And allow that journey, the journey to begin from there, where we use the power of breath to feel an experience of ourself in increasingly subtle ways. And catch that thread, that pranic thread that empowers breath, and follow it inward. That's not necessarily the topic for today, but I want to remind all of us that that is why we're practicing, to find our inner essence. And in the context of power, the power of spiritual community, if we want to live in a beautiful world and help to sustain the beauty and joy in our world, our prime responsibility is to find that beauty and joy within through inner connection. Our personal practice empowers our ability to find spiritual community. When we do that, we begin to grow. And one other word that would be great to put right next to this, that's good homework for later, is a word that many of us might have heard of called tapas. It's in the niyamas. It's also in the classical, in Yoga Sutra chapter 2, verse 1, which is known as Kriya Yoga. Whenever we try to expand our comfort zone, whenever we begin to see the extent of our capacity and purposefully stretch our capacity, we're forced with a very a common experience that there's resistance to change, resistance to growth. And joyfully and skillfully working with that resistance is exactly what tapas is all about. And it begins with knowing what it is that we're trying to, why it is that we're trying to grow and expand. When we have a goal, it's not called torture, it's called discipline. Same practice which is torturesome is joyful when we know why we're doing it. And as we skillfully expand our comfort zone, we begin to shine and grow. The literal meaning of the word tapas is radiance. What kind of radiance? It's radiance of our inner being, our identity. That kind of radiance is exactly what prana is all about. We concentrate and refine our pranic awareness through tapas. So we can go back and study Yoga Sutra, a number of different sutras, but specifically chapter 2, verse 1, and learn a little bit more about this. When we do that, we see ourselves in a new light. Tapas is radiance. Seeing ourselves in a new light and seeing the world in light, in that light, is the gift of tapas. It's exactly what we're hoping to find as we connect inside. When we do that, something amazing happens. We grow. And I have a quote here that is a very famous quote by a great philosopher, thinker, poet, Nobel laureate, and sage, Rabindranath Tagore. Many of you might have heard of the name of Tagore. And it's a brief quote of a larger quote, which said, "The evolution of man is the evolution of creative personality." It goes on to talk about how human beings are unique in nature, in their ability to transform biological laws and find the deeper spiritual laws which propel, quote unquote, evolution, which he refers to here as the evolution of creative personality. Through tapas, we find this evolution of our creative personality, very relevant to what we're experiencing today. So much of the unrest, inequality, turmoil is based on divisions which we perceive to be external, whether it's a sense of discrimination or unrest based on gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, race, cultural identity. All of these are, to some extent, not a large extent, external. And from the perspective of yoga, they're all external, because yoga defines our soul itself to be internal and everything outside of that to be something which is an expansion of whatever that nucleus is. When we work with ourselves within, when we try to grow beyond, refine our awareness to see something more subtle, we're working with this evolution of our creative personality. And we begin to see human beings as human beings. It's an amazing thing. If we can see human beings exactly for that, a beautiful, pristine expression of human essence, all these other identities are useful in a certain context, but they can never divide us. It's an extremely constructive, positive way of looking at it. It's the exact opposite of trying to bring things down to the lowest common denominator. Anger and fear are never a solution to anger and fear. Love, which is such a subtle idea, is. The essence of love in yoga is really this idea of inner connection. We bring it forward through our tapas, our practice. Discipline, a disciplined engagement with our identity. What happens when we find that? We become more simple, more humble. The litmus test in my own life, in my own experience, for trying to understand what I should aspire to be, or how when I see people that I respect, has always been the depth of their simplicity, their ability to be completely comfortable and yet highly productive. Simplicity is often very misunderstood as a lack of capacity. And yet the hardest thing to do is to find our own essential awareness. And when we do, we find that we're extraordinarily essential, which expresses itself in simplicity, contentment, and a humility which is not in any way contrived, but rather our personality. Those kind of qualities are extraordinarily disarming. If you've had the opportunity to be in the presence of people like that, even if you had a bad day, if there's something on your mind, situation that didn't feel right, really frustrated, it's like it all melts away. All of our external turmoil finds stability and resolution in the presence of true peace. And that really comes from the inside. Imagine a society whose prime goal was to find inner connection. That kind of society would have a very different way of going about conflict resolution. And as yogis, we have that opportunity to be a catalyst to find that. When we find that through our personal practice, through our practice of yoga and meditation, as we shine, grow more radiant, more peaceful, more simple, we're able to allow everyone to be content in their own way. And we're spontaneously motivated to come together and reflect. A word in yoga, which is often called satsanga. It's literally means to sit in the light of truth. Normally, this word is translated as some kind of spiritual dialogue, a lecture, spiritual lecture. But let's look at the deeper meaning of this word. Coming together to be in the light of Sat, eternal truth, truth which isn't defined externally, but rather is internal. We collect our personal radiance, our joy, and we want to share it. We want to amplify it. This is the beginning. This is the power of spiritual community, but this is the beginning point of it really being concretized and expressed. When seekers of truth come together to share, that's satsang. Extraordinarily important. Why? It helps us to see and be seen. It helps us to have the opportunity to amplify whatever our own experience was, to refine it. Human beings are intrinsically social beings. We want to share the best of ourselves and receive the best that the world has. And that's where the idea of satsang comes in. There's another word which can be a good parallel to what we just started here, called swadhyaya. Normally translated as self-reflection, or the study of swa, our own essence, which we spent so much time half an hour ago talking about, essence of our humanity. Tapas and swadhyaya go together. They're twin forces that go together. When we work to discover our own inner radiance, it's the light that we use to reflect on our own essence. We use the power of our own inner being to help us understand our inner being. That is the light, that is the focal point of satsanga. Trying to see a reflection of our own presence in the experiences of others and in dialogue. It's like the idea of a spiritual mirror. Why do we use a mirror in normal life? It's because we have a desire to see what we look like and to make sure that as we do so, we can prepare ourselves, beautify ourselves, so that we can try to share the best of ourselves with the world. Spiritual mirror is satsang, where we know that certain things are easier to see when they reflect from the inside out and then back in. When we hear the experiences of others and their pursuit of their own inner essence, it's like it's a mirror bouncing off of them coming to us. It's easier to understand sometimes. It's inspiring. And it gives us a unique context for our own journey. And look at it again in the power of spiritual community. We're trying to find that commonality, that unity. When we come together with the intention of seeing how someone's pursuit has, someone's spiritual pursuit, what it's meant to them. And when we find that, wow, it's so resonant with my own experiences and my own pursuit, that's concrete foundation for discovering spiritual community. Not because of any external identity, but because we're all reflecting on the fact that the same essence of humanity is what shines in all of us. Satsang doesn't, it shouldn't be pigeonholed only in this definition of a spiritual discourse. Anytime human beings come together without any external agenda or any agenda to reinforce external identities, but rather to reflect on their own inner essence, swa, something that comes from the heart, shared from heart to heart. That's satsang. Profoundly nourishing. In fact, humanity can't exist without satsanga. The moment as a society, as a humanity, we forget the importance of sharing something that comes from our deepest part of our being, we're no longer the same. In fact, this is what a yogi would say, that civilization or culture springs from our capacity, our willingness to dive deep and to share. This kind of thing is the very heart of a cultured, civilized expression of humanity. Everything else is just a nice to have. All of this opportunity, what good is it if it doesn't allow us to share the best of ourself, essence of ourself? Satsanga does that. We live in the light of truth, we share it, and we yearn to see that light reflecting in the eyes of others, in the voice of others. We yearn to see this beauty in the heart of others, and then see what it means when it bounces back to us as we hear it, as we see it, as we feel it. It's forming really deep spiritual bonds. This can happen as we read and reflect on source wisdom. It can happen as we hear the words of fellow seekers and people who have had their own direct experience and are spontaneously motivated to share it unconditionally. It can happen in person. It can happen virtually. It can happen over a long span of time. When we read something which came from inner essence, from Swa, hundreds or thousands of years later, we're transported back to that same experience. All of that is a form of satsanga, an expression of swadhyaya, finding that inner essence. And it profoundly nourishes us. It brings us together around a common identity, an identity that comes from our core, the essence of our humanity. That is what brings spiritual community to life. It's the heart of spiritual community. Practice and the desire to receive and share living experience is the nucleus of spiritual community. And it's what makes spiritual community come to life. It's the very essence of our humanity. It transcends any particular geography, culture, religion. This has always been here. And when we recognize that, that we're seeing this through the unique vantage point of yoga and meditation, and it's an extraordinarily systematic and rich body of knowledge. But the idea of interconnection and sharing essence transcends yoga and meditation. It's our pathway to get there. But we begin reflecting on, wow, this is exactly what human beings have always aspired to. And even today, what we're all looking for and what could be the nourishment that we need to bring into our conventional definition of community, to bring it to life in a new way, to transform community from being a whole bunch of different identities based on ethnicity, culture, race, any other external identity, and find their underlying essence and unity. Through our pursuit of interconnection, an experience of ourself at a deeper level, which yoga defines in a very specific way in the eight limbs, as the path to find that awareness, that pranic awareness, and lead the mind inward. Allow the mind to discover a deeper potential, which Swami Rama often said that meditation does that which nothing else can, for it introduces you to yourself. We really feel like we begin to learn who we are. And we take that, whatever that is, and we share it, or in many cases, we seek to hear others' experiences. We're more prepared to receive. We open our arms. It's far, far, far harder to be embraced than it is to embrace. We have to put ourselves in that vulnerable position. We come forward together and we receive what others wish to share that comes from within, satsang. And coming, bringing it to full circle, the third element which brings spiritual community to life, I'll broadly term as service. When we find our connection, our power, when we reflect on it and share it, we know what is ours to do. And just to put a Sanskrit word next to it, it's really our dharma, finding us. I don't have the time today to go into this, but a future live stream will discuss it. Dharma is not something that we create, just like spiritual community isn't something we create. It is a resource. It's an inner identity based on pure purpose that manifests in a unique way based on our circumstances, our personal likes and dislikes, and the deeper forces of the law of karma. Whatever it is that's propelling our life, which is mysterious, and yet it's not a force that's purposeless. It's not random. There is a unique current to life. That current, in large part, determines what is ours to do. But the power of purpose that allows us to be fulfilled isn't determined by the world. It comes from inside. When that kind of relationship, from the inside out, propels our service, we're able to leave a legacy in the world. We know what is ours to do. We do it joyfully, skillfully. Skillfulness is another one of those classic terms in yoga. And our service brings us a sense of contentment. Spiritual community is about our collective evolution of our creative personality. It's about how we together can grow. And in that light, I'll conclude our satsang before we finish with the group practice with three verses that in a sense will help to put all of this into context about how interconnection, satsanga, service are the heart of spiritual community. This idea is not new. When we find this, we're profoundly nourished. We find that we're able to leave a legacy. We find that the world is beautiful and that we can even leave it in a more beautiful way. We find that the world isn't a place full of problems needing to be solved, but rather the world is full of opportunity waiting to be discovered, waiting to be experienced. And this is exactly why we come together. It's exactly why we undertake group practices like the year-long meditation, which was the inspiration for this lecture. How this kind of power of spiritual community pulls us together to undertake, to try to reach for the stars. We want to be extraordinary and we want to find extraordinary joy. That kind of impetus is the motivation behind group practices. A year or two ago, I did a live stream on the power of group practice and the dynamics of group practice. So feel free to go back and look at that. But the simple point here is, spiritual community is what allows a group practice to succeed. Here we are, only about 2 weeks away from the conclusion of our year-long meditation. 136 countries are involved in this practice. Over 8,700 meditators from 136 countries have come together for this Akhanda Japa, this unbroken group meditation, with a common goal of being a force to heal our connection to collective consciousness. This collective consciousness is what spiritual community is all about. It's just another word for it. That spiritual community transcends every single human identity. It's our collective awareness. The year-long meditation has been extraordinarily fulfilling for me personally and for us as a spiritual community. It's allowed us to see how we're truly held and guided by a deeper connection. That it's not in spite of the distance, but rather because of how vast this community is, that that's what allowed the practice to succeed. The fact that almost 9,000 people from 136 countries had to come together. Individually, none of us could have achieved this on our own. We had to work together because we wanted to, because we understood the value of finding interconnection, the value of sharing, and how meditation, that inner experience, a peaceful flow of awareness, was our anchor. We all anchored ourselves in an inward, peaceful space, shared that together, rejoiced in it, and allowed it to bring to the world whatever was best. We didn't practice together because there was a specific ill or a specific problem we were looking to solve. Peace isn't an absence of war, but rather it's an underlying force which brings nourishment to all. It was, and it's extraordinary how this is more needed than ever before. This kind of awareness that year-long meditation is based on is exactly what the power of spiritual community is all about. And what we're really excited to continue doing together as a community. Find this and amplify it. Find this inner presence and amplify it. That's the kind of inspiration which is leading us towards Vishoka meditation. This idea of Vishoka, a state beyond pain, beyond grief, beyond sorrow, is what is the very essence of our humanity. Find it, nourish it, and then share it. So if the year-long meditation, it's a little bit bittersweet for all of us, perhaps, that we worked so hard together, we practiced together, and yet now it's coming to a close on July 16th. What we should look to is to reflect, each of us, what has really been meaningful. What aspect of year-long meditation has really enriched us and touched us? What do we want to take as the gift from here to share with the world? And find that and do something with it. Make sure that our practice together becomes a force for positive change in our own life, in our communities, in our society, and inspire us to continue working together. Inspire us to really keep looking at this power of spiritual community in new ways and re-express how interconnection, satsang, and service can propel us forward. And as I alluded to, this idea of year-long meditation, spiritual community, is not new. Every generation works hard to discover this and implement it, going back thousands and thousands of years. And I'll conclude by reading you a few beautiful verses from this book called Lighting the Flame of Compassion. It's the last three mantras of the Rig Veda. The Rig Veda is one of the most ancient, if not the most ancient, source text in the world, at least 5,000 years old in written form, and even older before in an oral tradition. It has over 10,000 verses or mantras. These are the last three, which embody and epitomize all of the Rig Veda, which is the very force of knowledge itself. And when I read them to you, you'll see how meaningful they are in light of what we've been discussing as the power of spiritual community. I'll read them to you in English. You can go back and look at the Sanskrit later if you're inspired. May we walk together, talk together, and understand each other. Like bright beings joined in right thinking, may we share our bounty with each other. May our means of protection and guidance be similar. May our communities and their assemblies share similar goals. May our minds entertain similar thoughts. May we invoke the forces of creation and offer our oblations to them with similar intent.
very last verse. May our actions be congruent. May our hearts be harmonious. May we be like-minded. This is how we can prosper and be truly happy. Everything boils down to that last sentence. We all wish to prosper and be happy together. Everything else is for naught unless we can be happy together. Nothing else matters at the end of the day. 10,000 mantras end with this one profound sentence. How do we find that sense of happiness and prosperity together? By allowing us to all be guided by the same inner experience. It's said in such a simple way that may our actions be congruent. We find our alignment. That alignment never comes from the outside. It's from the inside, inner connection. May our hearts be harmonious. Opening our hearts and allowing ourselves to find that harmony is the hardest thing to do. And yet, it's the most important. When we find that, we're able to be like-minded, not because we all think alike, but because our minds are all deriving their nourishment from the same place. When our hearts are open and harmonious, our minds are aligned. Even when we're very, very distinct from the outside, we find an inner unity. And that's exactly what our journey is all about. That's exactly what the power of spiritual community is all about. And I hope it's exactly what inspires us to continue studying and practicing together. So with that, let's close just with a few minutes of a guided meditation of shwas prashwas pravahi. It's a big word that also is a practice known as soham pranayama, or soham meditation. For those of you who've already begun practicing Vishoka, you'll recognize it in that context. If this practice inspires you, I'd inspire you to go back to this new book, Vishoka Meditation, and the course, which is coming, which is already here. The unique thing about this practice is that we're trying to weave our inhalation and exhalation together in a very natural way, where there's no pause between each breath, no pause between each inhalation and exhalation. And what we find is that it's hard, eventually we can't pinpoint where the beginning is. Is our inhalation the beginning of our exhalation, or is our exhalation the beginning of our inhalation? And that's the whole point. That in a state of, in an awareness of unity, there's no beginning and end. That all of the diversities find their space in that experience. The sound so accompanies the flow of awareness of our inhalation, and the sound hum accompanies the awareness of the flow of exhalation. Each sound is the origin of the other, so that they flow into each other. They each nourish and support each other in a very profound way. So with that, let's get prepared to do our practice. So find a comfortable seat in a chair, on the ground, wherever you are at home, and allow the body just to rest in your seat. Be a little bit of propping underneath your hips so that they're slightly above the knees. Hands resting on your knees or thighs. And close your eyes and go inward. Allow the body to be at rest. And for the stillness of the body, to invite the mind to also grow still. Feel the weight of your body resting in your seat, in the floor beneath you, allowing you to hold the body effortlessly and comfortably. Take a few complete breaths and let the body rest in this posture. Feel the smooth movement of your lower abdominal region with each breath. And use that movement to help you invoke a more and more relaxed, smooth breath. A breath which is free from any pauses, shakiness. A deep breath which stays within your capacity and yet nourishes you fully. An even breath where the flow of inhalation and exhalation are equal. A silent breath. As we continue breathing, the breath goes more and more subtle. Take two complete breaths where you inhale from the base all the way to your crown and exhale from your crown to the base. In these breaths, feel a natural upward flowing awareness as you inhale from base to crown, and a natural downward flowing awareness as you exhale from crown to base. Invite these breaths to awaken an experience of the space which the body occupies, and a unique energetic presence that fills the space. Now become aware of the flow of breath at the opening of your nostrils. Simply be aware of that first touch of breath as you inhale, and sense that space at the opening of your nostrils. Use that awareness as the starting point of your breath, and inhale from the opening of your nostrils, inward and upward, somewhere towards the center of your forehead. And as the inhalation concludes, naturally exhale from that point back to the opening of the nostrils. Weave each breath into the next, releasing your effort and allowing each breath to naturally flow into the next. Bring your awareness to the natural upward flowing feeling, upward flowing awareness as you inhale. And allow that to propel your awareness. And feel the natural downward flowing awareness as you exhale. Weave this energetic flow of awareness into a smooth, circular awareness. Now we'll weave awareness of the sound, soul, and hum with our breath awareness. Hearing the sound, soul, as we inhale, naturally followed by hum with each exhalation. Feel the energetic flow of awareness of inhalation with the sound, so, and the downward flow of awareness as we exhale, the sound, hum. Allow each to blend into the next so that there's no pause. Smooth flow of awareness. This space of inner radiance brought forward by this flow of awareness, completely unbroken, each breath flowing into the next incessantly, nourished by the power of soul hum, awakening our presence to our inner essence. Mind feeling its own awareness. We offer our love and gratitude to this inner essence, our home. Find our identity here as we prepare to come out. And then bringing some warmth in your palms. Opening your eyes into them. Coming out to conclude. It's been a joy and pleasure to be with you all this afternoon. I look forward to continuing to study and practice together. And if this meditation was inspiring, please go back and look in the Wisdom Library at more meditations and context about this practice, and check out Vishoka meditation. It's an extraordinarily powerful gift, an opportunity for us to keep growing together and take all of the momentum of our practice and study of the Yulong meditation to a deeper place, and to see how the sequence of practices can lead us to a very potent peak experience of our inner essence. Thank you, and I hope to see you soon.